Hey, I'm Savin Gavia, and you are now listening to Can a Player Play live every Sunday at 2:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Make sure you check out these good fellas at www.facebook.com/playerology. And also, make sure to get your copy of the new book entitled Who Is She and What Is She to You on Amazon or worldmovement.com. Can a Player Play? Oh, pretty Tony. Put in us.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. It's your boy, Lamon Patterson. You're listening to Can a Player Play? Today, we have a very exciting show lined up for you today. We have this young lady, Miss Karen Severson, that's going to be joining us shortly to have a very powerful testimony. Today, we're going to be talking about an issue that's going around nationwide. We're going to be speaking on bullying. We're going to define the different types of bullying, which, you know, I didn't know there was that many types of bullying going around. Definitely there is teenage bullying, cyber bullying, and all these things develop into some type of violence, domestic violence, so on and so forth. But we're going to be entering into that in just a moment when our guests join us. Miss Severson, of course, author, painter, minister, motivational speaker, definitely have a lot to share with you about her story, especially about her anti-bullying initiatives and her books, Hope Beyond Fences and My Life, I Lived It. Let me see if Ms. Severson is with us yet. Ms. Severson, have you joined us yet?
Yes, I have. Hi.
Hi, hi, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I hope I covered everything. I know you've got so much to share with the listeners, and you've done so many tremendous things, and you have such a powerful testimony. And hey, we definitely want to start with that. Definitely start with your bullying initiative, and then we could talk about other stuff that you have going on with your documentary. And I'm going to start talking. Audience, Ms. Karen Severson.
Thank you. Well, when it comes to, like you said, the documentary, we are doing that. It's in the process right now. As far as the books, they are written, of course, and they're published. And you can actually, they're available on Amazon, both of them are. But what I'm doing now with the bullying initiative for me, I have a motto that I think that everybody needs to be informed, and I call it Get a Clue, and that's an acronym for Clue is K-L-U-W-E, and that means knowledge, learning, understanding, wisdom, and experience. And I think if more people had some knowledge about what bullying is, and they learn about what it is, and they can understand what bullying is and why people do it, and why they are being bullied, they can get some wisdom, you know, on how to handle it. But most important, they need to talk to somebody with experience, because
right.
I think experience speaks volumes. And
let
that's
this.
Me.
Let me ask you this: What do you think? I mean, is bullying, of course? Well, I can't say of course. What do you think bullying actually really starts? Is that a childhood thing or is it teenage bullying? I guess I'm asking that because I'm just learning now that there's so many different types of bullying.
You know, for when you are bullied, it usually starts at, like, in the neighborhood, sometimes at home, in school, especially at school. But I think for the bully themselves, I think it's there's a lot of contributing factors. They were picked on. They were bullied. You know, somebody doesn't just, they're not just born and they become mean. You know, there are always contributing factors that cause them and shape them to become that person. And bullying, it's a way of an expression of anger, of insecurity, of feeling less of self-worth, being hurt inside, all the pain that you've dealt with. And basically you have no coping skills. And so you retaliate. And what you do is you retaliate on somebody weaker than yourself, because you're not going to retaliate on somebody who you know, is bigger and meaner, you retaliate on the weaker vessel. And you only do that to make yourself feel better. And it's a horrible cycle, but yeah, it's everywhere, you know, in the sports and across America, across the world. I talked to a lady last night from Scotland, and she talked about her grandsons being bullied. I mean, this really is worldwide. But originates, huh? I'm sorry?
I was just going to ask you, do you think this is a taught behavior, or should I say learned behavior from the home, or is this something bullies pick up in the street?
Well, I think majority pick it up in the streets and in the mainly in the school, but it's kind of what happens in your childhood. Like for me personally, I was molested by a female cousin when I was 6 years old. She was only just a few years older than me, but she started doing just violating me sexually until I was 13. And what she did, she used my adoption against me and said, nobody loves me, nobody wants me, she's the only one who loved me. And she was right. The way she loved me, she was the only one who did that. And so I believed her. And what it did is it screwed up my mind. I mean, I was so scared I would be sent back to somebody who didn't want me. I was so intimidated by her. I had an identity crisis. I didn't know what gay was because this was back in the early 70s, you know, and it wasn't really talked about like today. And so I didn't know what I was dealing with. So, I mean, I had a really mental mess up for lack of better words. I was really messed up in my mind. And, she would use things against me and pick on me and not so much hurt me, but she would occasionally if I didn't comply. So I found it easier just to comply and get it over with. But I also discovered that I was getting bigger than her. I was a big girl. And I started thinking, I think I can take her. You know, if she keeps doing this to me, I think I can stop this. And in doing that, you know, I ended up picking on other people smaller than me to earn some confidence. And by the time I was 13 and I told her, no, this is enough, it just stopped. She didn't keep on. And I felt, wow, that's all it took was for me to stand up. But in the meantime, I had become a bully. I started picking on people weaker than me because I felt that's what she was doing to me. And usually bullies learn by being bullied first.
Yeah, that's what my next question was, because either it seemed like you either learn to bully others or you'll continue being submissive to being bullied.
Right.
I mean, don't seem like there's no in the middle. Either it's one way or the other. Either you'll continue being bullied or you'll in turn bully somebody else. And do you feel like that if you endured stuff like that from a childhood, teenager, and going into adulthood, do you feel like that contributes to any other domestic abuse?
Well, for people that are in domestic situations where you do see the domestic abuse, no doubt. Because once again, whether it's a female abusing the male or a male abusing the female, there was something in the abusers or the bully, let's say, in their past to cause them to act like that. Maybe, you know, a father was abusive or a mother, or maybe a teacher. I mean, there's so many avenues and areas where they could have been picked on, and they didn't know how to handle it, so they did the best that they could. Like for me, I strung out on drugs and alcohol, you know, just to numb the feeling, but it also gave me a false sense of boldness, like I could do anything as long as I was intoxicated, you know? And so it's a mess. It's a bad cycle with bullying. You know, because everything gets involved from, you know, picking on other people to, like I said, abusing substances. I mean, it was so bad for me, especially being sexually violated, that I went out to prove that I wasn't gay because I didn't know what that was about and I didn't know how to deal with it. So I became pregnant at the age of 14. And, I mean, nobody knew what. And that's one of the problems, I think, today is the reason that we see all these problems with kids that are being bullied, they're not telling anybody. And see, if I would have just spoke up, like my parents asked me, why didn't you ever say anything? Because there's a fear. You don't want to say anything when you're afraid. And so you keep it in, you keep it in, you keep it in. And what happens? Look at Columbine. They explode. Kids start doing crazy things because they don't know how to cope. And it all starts with they're afraid to tell somebody. Who do you tell? You know?
They're afraid, they're ashamed, they're afraid. Well, I guess the same thing, to be ashamed and afraid that people are going to poke fun at you or not believe you.
Right. That's the big one right there. Yeah.
Yeah, not believe you. Well, let's talk about your book a little bit. My Life, I Lived It. Was some of these experiences talked about in that book? Or what was the motivation for that book?
Yes, all of those experiences was. It's actually an autobiography of mine from my adoption all the way to the present. It's actually also my second book. And the first one was called Hope Beyond the Fences. And the reason book...
Let's go to that one first, Karen. Let's stay in order.
Okay. Well, Hope Beyond the Fences is actually, it was my autobiography, but it was written, and actually the cover of it I ended up painting was of a prison scene. And see, I had become a bully, and I learned how to be mean. But I want to say this, though, for anybody listening. Bullies usually, like 99% of them, they do not act alone. We're like pack animals, like wolves. You know, wolves, if you see a wolf by itself, it's not mean. But if you see him in the pack, you better watch out. You know, and that's the same thing with bullies. When they have even just one other person with them, they attack. Well, that's what happened to me when I was a young girl. At the age of 12, I had a friend whose family depended on me to fight her battles. And so I became a bully because the more she was aggressive and talked to people and got herself in trouble, the more I had to fight and be mean. So together we were like a force to be reckoned with. You know, she was going to be like the chihuahua and bark at everybody, and I was the pit bull who fought the battles. But, together that's how we were. And I got tired of this. I got resentful. I felt I was being used, taken advantage of, and there's a lot more to it, and I do explain that in my books. But by the age of 17, I was involved with some other girls that had a problem with this certain individual, and to make a long story short, and I do explain it in my books in details, what happened was we got involved when bullying her and picking on her. It went too far, and she ended up dying that day, and it should have never happened, but that's the worst case scenario of bullying. And I ended up doing almost 24 years in prison, you know, as part of the murder. I was not the perpetrator, but I contributed greatly. I take my responsibility. And while I was incarcerated, that's when the Hope Beyond the Fences was starting to grow and form. Because I realized, you know, I am not institutionalized. The prison, I'm not going to have time do me. I'm going to do my time. And I have to do it wisely. And every time I looked out the fences, I knew there was hope. There was something greater than me. And I remember one day realizing something in my life has got to change, and it has to be me. Because nobody's going to change around me. No circumstances is going to change, but I have to change. And my past will never change. What I was involved with, We could talk about it all day long, but it'll never bring that girl back, and it'll never change what happened. And so while I was in there, I went on a quest to figure out how I can change myself, who I had become and who I wanted to become. And so I did. So for over 2 decades while being incarcerated, I changed my life. I got a hold of, you know, I just screamed out to God, and he found me. You know, a lot of people say, I found God in prison. Well, God was never lost. I was lost, and he found me and changed my life. And that is the reason for the first book. There was Hope Beyond the Fences. I actually did get involved in ministry. I did all the Bible studies, but then I decided I wanted to go greater than just doing Bible studies. So I started going even more in depth. I started self-paying for them. and I earned an associate's degree while being incarcerated, and it went all the way to a doctorate of theology. And apparently I was the first woman. I don't know if it was in the state of California, but I know it was in the California Institution for Women to ever earn a doctorate while being incarcerated. And so that was a great accomplishment, and I knew that something, I had a purpose in my life, you know, and it was going to be greater than just being called an ex-felon. And so when I did finally parole on December 9th, 2011, my purpose in prison was helping all the women as much as I could, being involved in ministry, helping in self-help groups, talking to them, just being there for them. But when I got out of prison, my purpose kind of vanished. It was like, what do I do now? I don't have the prison scene. And so I knew I should write a book about what I did. Somebody encouraged me. And I decided to use a pen name. It's under the name Kay Crane. And the reason I did that is because I didn't want to be a sore reminder to the victim's family. I didn't want anybody to think that I came out and I just want to, you know, just get out and write a book and think that I'm something special and, you know, read my story. You know, I only did it because so many people encouraged me and they said that I have a testimony that could reach many people, not just one area. And so I went out there and I shared my story that there is hope. A lot of people have loved ones or friends that are incarcerated and they think that that's it. And it's not
it.
And a lot of people,
Karen, they have this misconception about the institutions of prisons rehabilitate people. They don't rehabilitate people. People rehabilitate themselves.
Right, right.
They have
right.
this thing,
you are
oh,
totally
oh
right.
go, you're going to the institution, you know, I get to go to school, blah, 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 blah. But what they don't realize is institutions now are the third largest industry in this country. They make money by providing dairy products, furniture to the military, but they do not rehabilitate people. So people that are there,
right.
like yourselves, that took the time to look deep within yourself and make the necessary changes and see that there is actually hope beyond the fences. That's a powerful testimony
right.
in itself. And I'm sorry,
right.
I just wanted to say that.
No. But you know what? You're 1,000% correct. No institution is going to do it for you. You're right. The person has to make that decision. I made that decision coming out of a parole board hearing. And when I heard all the horrible things they were saying about me, I started thinking, man, some of those things are true. Some aren't, but some are true. And I thought that that's it. I don't want to be that person. You know, what can I do? Something has to change. And that's when I realized it's me. I have to change. And so that was my whole desire in prison. I just somehow I got to find who am I supposed to be? I'm not supposed to be a convicted murderer. I'm not supposed to be somebody that's mean and hates people. I'm not supposed to be that. And so I went on a quest to find out who am I supposed to be? What is my purpose in life? And when I paroled and I wrote that book, Hope Beyond the Fences, a lot of churches, you know, they had me do book signings with them and give my testimony because they wanted to know the truth, that people are not so far gone that they can't be changed. And I think a lot of society thinks, well, once you're convicted or once you're found guilty, regardless of the circumstances, you're guilty and that's it and that's all, you deserve to burn in hell. I mean, that's what everybody has been saying about me on the internet. But it's not true, you know, and if I listen to everything that's being said about me, I would be like some of the kids today that are being cyberbullied, that people are telling them, you might as well just commit suicide. Nobody likes you. You're a horrible person. Well, I decided I have another choice. I don't have to read the stuff. You know, and a lot of kids, they don't have to read the stuff. And it's not true. Just because one thing I learned, and this is powerful for me, I learned that everybody has an opinion. But just because they have an opinion and talk about it, it doesn't make it the truth.
Right.
And people can voice their opinions about me. It doesn't make it true.
And my mother used to always tell me they didn't build jails for horses, which means that you don't have to be a bad person to go to jail.
Right, right. You're right. You know, I met a lot of wonderful women in there. They got caught up in some stuff, you know, and we all do. I was a rebellious teenager. I mean, I don't even know what a 17-year-old thinks like. I didn't know what I was thinking like. You can't explain it. They're teenagers. It's one of those phenomenons. Why do a teenager think the way they do? And there's just no justifying it. There's no excuses. There's no nothing. I was caught in a bad situation. I did some bad things. I made horrible choices. And the end result was incarceration. But I turned that around. And now, after that first book, like I said, I tried to take myself out of it, which is why I used a pen name. I didn't want Karen Severson to be, oh, look at what she's doing now. I didn't want it to be that. So I tried to take me out of it and just give God glory for what he did in my life and change my life and to move away from that and to focus on doing good things now. So the second book came because too many people said, well, we know it's you. We found out it's you. It's your story. We can tell. And instead of hiding, why don't you just come out and be real and just tell it all? Because there's too many things you didn't say that people are questioning. So after a lot of prayer, because I did not want to do that, because I really didn't want to put me and my junk out there. But why not? My mess is a message. And that, right. You know, I felt like as everybody was trying to tell my life story for me in movies, in books, in different things, people were telling my life, but they had it all wrong. They didn't even know me. They never even talked to me about it, but they were trying to say what kind of person I was. I decided, you know what, I'm going to do the second book. I'm going to do it raw, uncut, tell all, because it was my life. I lived it, and that's why the title. I even used my prison ID as the cover because I spent more than half my life in prison, and that was a huge part of my life. But in there, that's where I changed. That's where my life began. And, you know, the best day of my life, I say, was when I was arrested, because up until then, I lived in a living hell. I was suicidal. I became a cutter. I felt I deserved pain. It was just a horrible, horrible experience. And I do talk about that in the book. It was just horrible. But when I paroled after years of discovering that, you know, I'm really not a bad person and I could be of use, that I had a different purpose in life. And my purpose now is to help people. And what do I have the most experience of? Being a bully. That is the big thing. I have the experience. I'm not just going to tell you the legal issues behind it, though I can tell you that too, but I'm not going to tell you that. I'm going to tell you what it's like to be bullied, to be a bully, to go through the worst case scenario, being caught involved in a murder, to doing over 2 decades of prison time behind it, and come out walking in with barely a GED and coming out with a doctorate of theology, coming out somebody that couldn't even see her name clear to be able to sign it pretty. I came out an artist. I mean, these are just amazing things, miracles that happened in my life. But it's not just me. I'm nobody special. It could happen to anybody. You know, I literally grew up in prison because up until then, I didn't have any life coping skills at all. I grew up through the hard knocks in prison.
Do you still go to the prisons to speak or do something like prison industries or anything like that?
You know, right now I don't. And the reason is because of the parole. You know, parole doesn't want you to go back into prison. They don't want you to do anything while you're on parole because it's a touchy subject. You know, I'm almost off parole, but not quite yet. And so until then, I cannot go back into the prisons. I do write to a lot of prisoners, though, and I do encourage them. People have ordered the book, Hope Beyond the Fences, and have sent them to, you know, prisons. But I do, like I said, now, what I'm doing now is I'm working with the LAPD. There's a sergeant in the Hollywood division that he's involved in anti-bullying. And so he's kind of taken me on to help him. I'm going to be talking to the cadets next year. Which is kind of exciting, and it's kind of weird because I was on the other side of the law, and now I'm going to go talk to the law, and it's just kind of, you know, it's just a turn of events that is just, it baffles me, but it's amazing that I could be in that position. Well, I'm also...
That's who the people want to hear from. That's who the actual people want to hear from. They want to hear from people that actually walk the walk. Those are the ones that can talk the talk, not the ones that could read something in a book and can sit up and tell Karen how they think you feel. Nobody could tell you how they think you feel. Only somebody know that is you.
Right.
So that's the person for these other people to hear it from is from someone like yourself that know firsthand. I know that's who I would listen to.
Right. Oh, exactly. Like my mom, perfect example. My mom used to say, don't use drugs, they'll kill you. Well, my mom never even smoked a cigarette. So I thought she is the worst person to tell me that because my friends were using drugs and none of them were dying. And so I, of course, used drugs. Now, had a drug addict came to me and showed me their arms and showed me that they're homeless and lost everything, I would probably listen to somebody like that because they knew what they were talking about. You know, my mom, in all her best efforts, she tried, but she did not have the experience. And same with bullying. A lot of people think, well, just, you know, they're just mean kids. Well, there's a reason they're mean kids. You need to look at the root, not just at the way they are today. I mean, look at the root. What caused it? Let's yank it by the root. It's like weeds. If you pull weeds, if you don't grab the root, they're going to grow back. You got to grab this thing by the root.
Well, actually, we've seen a major cultural change in society because once upon a time, it was okay for parents to discipline their children. But now parents can't discipline their children, but it's okay for the police to kill them.
Right. Isn't that, see?
It
makes no sense.
None whatsoever.
Makes no sense. And see, and that's the thing. Bullying goes into the workforce. It goes into law enforcement, unfortunately. It goes into the churches even. You know, look at the priests that are violating the kids. It goes into the workplaces, you know, more, and, of course, the homes and the schools and the neighborhoods. You know, and the Internet, my gosh, the Internet has gone crazy. I'm getting bullied today, you know. You know, the kids, you know, they commit suicide and stuff because of the Internet, because of what people are saying. That's why I told you I have the choice, and I hope to tell kids, turn it off. Don't read it. Just because somebody says something doesn't make it true. It's just their opinion. It's just how mean they're being. And the people that are being mean, and I know from experience, I love to shine the flashlight on somebody else and point out your faults. You know, it's like pointing the finger. You have three pointing back at yourself. Well, I would shine a flashlight on somebody else's weakness to make myself look better. All the while, I'm hiding my pain. I'm hiding. I'm keeping from you what I'm really going through, but I'm going to take it out on a weaker vessel. And that's what bullying is all about. And I'm also working with Nick Lowry. He has a youth foundation for Champions Against Bullying. You know, he's the NFL Hall of Fame Kansas City Chiefs kicker. He has a gigantic organization, and he so kindly kind of took me under his wing, and we're working on things. Actually, we're working right now to write a book for children about bullying and stuff. I mean, there's just so many things out there that people need to realize. There are ways today you can talk about it. You can listen to people that have the experience. You could get educated, be informed of what is really going on. And that goes to parents, to teachers, to anybody out there, you know, and that's my life's goal. I mean, if I could just save one person, help them from being bullied or from being a bully, then it's all worth it for me. You know, then everything that I went through, unfortunately, I deeply regret and don't wish I went through that as far as the murder. But everything else, the prison experience, what I went through, I wouldn't change that for anything because it made me the woman I am today. And this woman that you're listening to, she loves people. She genuinely cares about people. And that's my goal. I just want to help. And I want others to help me help them.
Well,
you know, that's where I'm at.
That leads me to my next question for some other young ladies that have been listening to the show out there somewhere. If they find themselves in a situation where they are being bullied, what would you advise them to do? What would be their first things to do to get out of that situation?
Well, the first thing, depending on who is bullying them, but like if it's at school, tell a teacher, tell a parent, tell a police officer. There are people that want to hear. Go on the Internet. There on the Internet, you can just type up bullying organizations, and a whole bunch of them will come up. And each site has an area that says, if you are being bullied, you know, contact us. I mean, there are so many ways to get in touch with somebody that wants to help you. I mean, even we're coming up with a website that I want to help, and I mean, I wish I could help everybody because I know what I went through, and I don't think it's fair. But if you're being bullied, reach out and tell somebody. Tell your closest friend. Tell your friend's parents if you feel comfortable. Tell your parents. You know, tell your church. If you go to church, tell your pastor. Tell, like I said, teachers, counselors. Just tell somebody. Don't hide it. Don't hold it in. Don't think that you're the one that deserves all of that because you're not. You know, the person that's being the bully, they deserve to have that light shone on them so they could stop it. It needs to be stopped. And the only way to do that is for people to start telling. You know, and it's not a bad thing. It used to, back in the day, if you told, you were a snitch and you were this and you were that. You know what? That is so old. We're so past that. And I'm saying it from somebody that's been in prison. You know, tell if somebody is hurting you. Tell. That's the best thing you could do is tell somebody.
And that's the word that has to be reinforced because the greatest tool that the bullies have is the fear and the hope that they'll shame you into a position where you won't tell anybody. And that just gives
right.
them more power. And for, you know, parents and adults, I think they need to take a concentrated effort and start listening more to their children because sometimes their children try to talk to them and they're so busy they don't hear, they don't listen.
Right, right. And, you know, and that is so true. As far as the fear, for me, I never picked on anybody bigger than me and I never picked on anybody who I thought, you know, could fight me back and beat me up, but I was bullied the weaker vessels. Definitely, anybody I saw weak, who would be scared, who wouldn't tell, who I can intimidate, that's who I would bully. Knock books out of their hands, slam them into lockers, fight them after school. Yeah. But I only did that when I had somebody else or several people with me. And it was my way to find some kind of praise and because everybody would cheer me on. You know, it's really a sick cycle, but that's what happens. You go for the one that is so afraid of you, they're not going to say anything. Well, let me tell you, if there's anybody out there listening that is afraid of somebody, tell. Just tell. That takes so much of the fuel out of the fire of a bully, telling, because they don't want to be caught. The bully does not want to be caught. And if they think that you're not going to tell, they're going to pick on you. The moment you tell, they're letting go. They don't want nothing to do with that.
And for our male, my male listeners out there, there's nothing cowardice about telling somebody. Because one or two things are going to happen. One or two things are going to happen. Because even people that are bullied get tired of being bullied. And what happens is sometimes they come out of the corner and it's not always the best way. So the best thing to do is not let it get to the point where you're backed into a corner and break the law yourself. Just tell somebody, nip it in the bud, and counsel the problem out rather than end up taking the law into your own hands and have to pay twice.
Right. Let me say this. You know, for the bullies or those being bullied, well, you just hit on something that I wanted to say. Oh, the bullies, what I was going to say is why they are so mean is because they don't believe that anybody is going to come up against them. Okay. They believe, like you're saying, like they think that being a mean punk makes them powerful and makes them strong and makes them what's really strength. We think strength is bullying. That is such a myth. Because the true strength that any man or woman can have, boy or girl, the true strength in the individual is saying no and standing up and being able to tell. Because the real strength is sometimes just turning around and walking away. But what bullying is actually a huge sign of weakness because they can't handle their own life's issues, so they take it out on others. That is not a strength. That is weakness. So for the man that thinks he's tough and doing things, he needs to go look in the mirror and deal with himself because it's his life issues that are causing him to be mean, when in reality he's actually weak, very weak.
What anybody that attack in a pack is weak anyway, because men,
oh, yeah.
real men, if they got a problem with another man, they're going to deal with it one-on-one. They're not going to come
right.
four, five, six, seven guys. I mean, what's that? That's not showing any strength. That's showing weakness and cowardice right there.
So all that is a myth.
Sorry, we're having a bad connection on your end, Karen.
Oh, are we?
Yeah, you seem like you were going in and out.
Oh, okay. Am I better now?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay.
Now. Well, it's just totally a national situation that we definitely have to get under wraps. A friend of mine is running for president 2016. He has an initiative for anti-bullying. So hopefully...
Great.
Support him and get beyond this, because it's a revolving
Absolutely.
Door. It's certainly a revolving door, because the people that have been bullied, there's a chance that they'll go out and bully someone else, and
right.
we end up with domestic violence, we end up with sexual abuse, we end up with gang violence, we end up
right.
with people acting out in school, kids not wanting to go to school, and it's just crazy, and we have to stop it at some point.
You're right. And, you know, I know there are a lot of bullies that are out there, and they know that they were bullies in school, but maybe they're not today, which is great. More would speak out their experiences and how they felt being mean like that, what they were going through. If they could share that too, I mean, it's powerful to be able to say, look, I was a bully. I was mean. I was a horrible person. I used to pick on people, but I don't know more, and this is how I stopped. You know, there's change, and I changed me, and I decided, you know, to turn away from the things that were influencing me. And more people, there's so many out there. If more people would do that and we gather together as ex-bullies, oh, my gosh, the power of the experience alone would just dominate right now. You know, into this bullying thing that's going on. I mean, if all us ex-bullies would come together, we would dominate the bullies of today and take the power out. I believe
That's a good idea right there. Start an ex-bullying workshop.
Right. I should.
Yeah. Ex-bullying.
That would be awesome.
Start an ex-bullying workshop and attach it to everything else you're doing. And I'm sure there's a lot of elementary and junior high schools and high schools would embrace something like that, because they're dealing with it every day and don't know how to deal with it. And it's so bad now
right.
with, you know, gang violence in a lot of these schools, and it's just coming from that, because gangs bully other people to become part of the gangs. Gangs go to school, and a lot of the teachers, you know, they teach because they have to work to you know, support their kids and their families. But then when they are forced to have to deal with an unruly child in their classroom, they really don't care if that particular child learned anything or not, because they have to be there.
Right.
So, you know, it's all in the justice system, in our schools, it's everywhere. And we definitely need to address the issue while we can.
I agree. I totally agree with that. And that's, you know, that's something I'll pass by, you know, some of the people that I'm working with and see if we can't get together at a workshop, because I agree. I mean, there's nothing more powerful. And that's why I want to talk to, like, parents and stuff. A lot of parents for the teenagers, they think, well, they're just rebellious teenagers. Well, that's not necessarily true. They're not just rebellious. There's a reason why they're so angry. There's a reason why they're walking around so hurt. And if, you know, parents, if they're not the cause for the teenagers, you know, because some do come from abusive households, but if
right.
they're not the cause, then if parents could take the time and say, wait a minute, you know, we got to talk about this and we got to figure this out. You know, why are you doing this? Why do you feel like that? I mean, ask the important questions. Why are you so angry? But more important, listen. People need to listen. The signs are out there. The signs are all over the place. We just fail to listen.
Well, I think what you said, something very important, too, to the parents. The parents need to look at their star player. I mean, they need to look at themselves in the mirror, too, and ascertain first whether or not they're the cause or not. And once they find out or figure out that they are not the cause of the child's behavior or the reason for the child acting outside of the home, then I think they can become a little bit more proactive rather than looking out in the street first. Because it may not be coming from the street. It might be this man at home, you know, slapping up his wife every day, or vice versa, or verbal abuse in the home, and this is what this child is growing up. You know, that may be his dysfunctional environment or her dysfunctional environment, and they take that same behavior out in the street.
Yep, you're right. They totally do. You know, also the little innocent remarks that parents think they're saying to their child, well, you're stupid. You know, you didn't do that because you're stupid. That is like the worst thing you can say, because a child's going to take that and hang on to it, you know, and they're going to think, okay, maybe I am stupid. Maybe I do have to do something different. Maybe I am stupid. Well, I'll show you stupid, you know, and then we get an attitude.
I've been guilty of that, Karen, especially, you know, people come up in music families. I've been in music all my life, but, you know, people hear some little kid singing their heart out, you know, and you say, get out of here with all that noise, because you just got home from work, you know what I mean, you didn't work all day, tired. They sitting there singing their heart out or playing their instrument, and you say, get out of here with that noise. I don't want to da-da-da-da. But we don't realize. We don't realize what that did. We just that. I know we didn't mean it to be harmful or hurt, but we didn't realize the impact it had on that child.
Right. You know, my dad, he and I have talked about this since. When I was growing up, everything I did, he would say, oh, that's nice, but you could do better. Everything was that I could do better. Oh, that's good, but you could do better. You could do better. And I would give it my best. Now, my mom, on the other hand, she would praise me if I drew a stick figure. She'd think it was the greatest thing. But then my dad would say, no, you could do better. You could do better. Well, then I got to the point where I thought, no, I can do better. I'll show you better. You want straight A's? I'll give you straight F's. You know, I started getting an attitude. You know, I can't do better. I gave it my best, and it wasn't good enough. And when I asked him about that, you know, years later, and he said, was there anything different we could have done? You know, and I said, actually, not that you could have done it different, I said, but you used to tell me I could do better. You never accepted what I did as good or being proud of me or anything. He says, well, I always thought you could do better, so I encouraged you. I said, but your encouragement was more of a discouragement for me. He didn't realize, praise the thing at hand. Don't tell me I can do it better. And when I actually got my doctorate of theology, and I got ordained while I was in prison, and my parents were allowed to come in and be part of that. And it was the first time in all my life that when my parents were leaving, my dad stopped me and he hugged me. And he said, Karen, he said, my God, I'm proud of you.
Wow.
Oh, I get choked up thinking about it. That's all I ever wanted. You know, be proud of me. You know, just be happy. And that's all these kids want. They want somebody to be proud of them, you know, to let them know that they are okay just as they are. They don't have to be better. You know, accept them, love them, build them up, encourage them. They don't have to be mean. Why do you think we're so mean? Because our best is not good enough for everybody. So we retaliate and say, oh, heck with it. Now I have an attitude. No, I mean, it's just little things like that. Take the time to sit with your child for about 5 minutes and just go, wow, that's really good. I really like that. Let me hear your thoughts on this. Makes a world of difference. You know, I have a granddaughter right now, and I take, you know, with my daughter, I missed out on a lot. She was 5 and a half when I went to prison. And now she's going to be 32 pretty soon. So that's like, wow, a lot of years. But I have a granddaughter about that same age, and I make it a point when I babysit her, when I see her, I make it a point to take time with her. I take her by myself, just her and I, to amusement parks. I make her feel so special. And everything she does, I sit down and I listen. When she draws something, and, you know, what's a five-year-old going to draw? Nothing spectacular. But I make her think that it is the best thing I ever saw in the world. And she has such confidence because of that. And I think if more parents would take the time. You know, I'm blessed. I have a second chance with a grandchild. But how many people don't have that? they have the child right now. Don't wait for another chance. You got it right now. You know, we can nip this thing in the bud by making our children feel confident in who they are and not have to go out and try to be somebody they're really not just to
right.
get that praise.
Well, we're definitely going to have to reach out to the parents and ask them and pray for them too, Karen, so they can stop being
right.
so selfish. Because a lot of this, too, is because people are so selfish nowadays. They're so busy worrying about self and not looking at their attitude, behavior, and how it's affecting other people, even their own family. They
right.
don't. You know, they tend to take
right.
so many things for granted.
You're right.
They just do.
You are right.
So we
You're
just
right.
about
was,
we just I said we
go
just
ahead.
About talked about things. We didn't talk about your painting. I mean, I've seen some of your art. I mean, is that something you actively pursuing, or is that something you just playing around with?
You know, that's something that I played around with at first. I didn't even think I could. And next thing I know, it kind of turned into something. And I asked a few people that are artists, you know, to kind of give me some tips, but I never took classes. I never did anything like that. I just paint from my heart, and it's like a God-given talent, I guess. I didn't know I could do it. And I can, and it's kind of my place. I did it in prison a lot, and it was my escape. You know, I was able to paint something. My mind was involved in the painting, not in prison. Everything of my past didn't matter. I was painting something right then and there. So all of my paintings have a story behind them. And even today, I still paint. It's a passion now. And, you know, I want to share that with other people, too, because I believe we all have something inside of us that we just don't know yet. And once we figure it out what it is, we need to express it. Because that's part of who we really are. That's part of our makeup, you know. And sometimes, like I used to say, I can't even draw a stick figure. Oh, my gosh, I'm making beautiful paintings today.
Don't go there, because I still can't draw that. I still can't draw that with stick people, so don't go there.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's not talk about stick people, because that's all I can draw now.
Believe it or not, all it takes is just real easy. The way I learned, somebody told me, don't draw what you think you see. Just draw the shadows. Just draw the shapes and the shadows and give them a color of tone. You know, the tone of the colors. That's it. Don't look at a round ball and draw a circle. Just do the shadows, the shape with shadows. And I started doing that, and all of a sudden, oh, my gosh, a ball appeared, like, as a ball, not just as a round circle. It's amazing. You could do it. We all, I think, can do it. We just have to understand. We just need to be educated and to be informed, which is why the whole get a clue for the bowling, get informed. You know, there's a lot to it.
Totally, totally. I've always said before it's over, I'm going to teach myself how to paint.
Well, you could do it. You could definitely do it. I mean, coming from me, if you only knew and what I could do now, it's amazing. You could totally do it. You know, I think anybody could do anything. They just set their mind up and say, you know, I'm going to do this regardless. I'm going to read books if I need to. I'm going to go online and find out things. I'll take a class, whatever it takes. If you really want to do it, you could do it. It's like the piano person. They hear Beethoven or Liberace, or they hear of a great piano player, and they say, oh, I wish I could play the piano, but they don't take the lessons. You know, they don't do the hard work to get there.
Right.
You know, they just,
right.
there are a lot of wish. We have a lot of wishbone in America, or in this world. You know, we wish, but I wish I could be like that. Well, do something about it. I wish I wasn't being bullied. Do something about it. Go tell somebody.
Yeah,
you know,
that's the problem. They're more talkers and not doers.
Right. We need more backbone and not wishbone.
True. Well, Karen, I definitely want to thank you for taking time out and coming through and chatting with us and tell us your story. But before you go, I want to give a shout out, of course, to Lisa over at LRT and Audra, the good people over there. They're doing
right.
such great, great, great things. And got to definitely give my family love. Where can people contact you? Where can they go out and get your books?
Well, they could get my books, Hope Beyond the Fences by Kay Crane. That's my pen name. And I Lived It, My Life by Karen Severson. Both are available on Amazon. in different book places, but for sure on Amazon. So they can definitely get that. They can always get a hold of, through LRT, their website, and, you know, their emails or whatever they have put up out there. They can always get a hold of me through them. They're kind of my liaison. But, yeah, definitely. We're, like I said, the video, the documentary, we are working on that, so that will be something new to come out. And but we can do a lot. I do have an email. Stop bullying, KS. Well, I got to remember what it is. Stop bullying, KS8811 at Google. At Yahoo. And anybody can write to me too if they just want to have some tips on stop bullying.
Do you have a website for a Clue?
No, not yet. Well, actually, it's about to be put up very soon. We do. It'll probably be within a week or two it's going to come up. It's just going to be one of those, I think you just punch in my name and it'll come up. We're in the process. We're getting some last-minute touches to it. So it'll be about a week or two.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely keep our listeners abreast of what you're doing, and we definitely support you. And keep us apprised of everything that you have going on, and we definitely want to see the documentary. I know that's going to be powerful as well.
Oh, absolutely. We're hoping. We expect it by this summer. It should be out.
And definitely when you get the organization set up, we want to be part of that, because I also have some other friends in Vegas that I would like to introduce you to, Keith Bowen, that he has Bully Busters. And Nevada.
Oh, great.
And this other young man has an organization called Bullying as a Crisis. So,
great.
I think we could all actually put our heads together and really get some serious listeners and some support behind
it.
And maybe we can collect.
Absolutely. Yeah, and just give them Lisa's information, LRT Entertainment. You know, the website for that, www.lrtentertainment.com. And, yeah, go in there and I think it's .com, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, you got to remember, when I went to prison, I didn't even have cell phones. And I got out, and, boy, there's cell phones and the Internet. They didn't have any of that when I was arrested. So it's a whole new world for me out here, and all I know is I want to be part of it to make it change for the better.
Isn't that amazing? Because back then you remembered maybe 1,000, 2,000 phone numbers in your head. Nowadays you do good if you remember two.
Right. Isn't that funny? Yeah, it is amazing. It is amazing, that's for sure.
Lucky if you remember two. But again, thank you so much, Karen. The show is going to be archived. It's going to be available for anybody that didn't get a chance to hear it. They can hear it from the beginning. iTunes podcast. They can always go to blogtalkradio.com/player, or just type in the show, Can a Player Play? Because we definitely try to bring a show with people that could add some insight to this game that we call life, people that have real and true testimonies. Hopefully we could be informative. Hopefully we could touch someone else out there and make a difference in your life. That's what the show is all about.
Excellent.
So, definitely. We would be definitely checking in with you, Karen, and you have a blessed, blessed day.
And, I will, and you and your listeners do the same. Definitely.
Keep doing the good work.
I will do my best. Thank you so much.
And thank you. Ms. Karen Sigerson, y'all, right here on I Am NB. I'm sorry, I got my shows mixed up. Miss Sandy, Can a Player Play today on Sunday? Doing too much, y'all. Go check out Miss Karen Siverson. Pick up her book, support her. We're trying to stamp out anti-bullying. If you just joined us, call the number 646-929-2870. We're going to play a musical selection, and we'll be right back.
If you just answer, girl, But you get the worst.